Once I had that Everest in my life, once I had that overarching dream in my life, a lot of focus, a lot of dedication, a lot of passion, that relentless drive to go on a journey to get to the top, I think that only started with the fact that I had an Everest in my life. If you don't even have an Everest in your life, what are you going to chase? What are you going to pursue? And like I turned around and I saw Everest. Last rays of sunset were falling directly on Everest. And all these mountains around Everest were in the color of gray and blue, but Everest in the middle was burning golden in color, as if someone had lit Everest on fire. And for me, when I saw Everest that way, I kind of, just fell in love with Everest.
Hey guys, welcome to yet another episode of Power of Passion. I am Nivedita, the host for the show. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. In this podcast, I interview the inspiring personalities who follow their passion in order to help you find your passion and live it with a purpose and lead a meaningful life. Today's episode is going to be a very special one as we get to talk with the world's first Indian vegan mountaineer who scaled the Mount Everest not once, but twice. I'm sure most of you would have guessed by now. Yes, it is none other than Kuntal Joysher. Kuntal is not only a vegan adventurous climber, but also a dementia awareness advocate, an excellent photographer, and a humanitarian inspiration. Kuntal started out his career as a software engineer and then followed his dream to scale up the Everest. So please do listen to Kuntal's adventurous journey till the very end. And without further delay, let's jump into our conversation. Hello, Kuntal. Welcome to my podcast. I'm so happy and I feel so blessed that you have come to my podcast and you made your presence here. Thank you so much again for coming.
Thank you so much for inviting me. Looking forward to our conversation.
So you started your career as a software engineer. And then at what point did you think of mountaineering? When did that sprout in your mind?
There was one instance that happened in my life. Look, I don't have any background around mountaineering. No one in my family does. I come from a Gujarati business family and I don't remember anyone in my family even doing anything remotely close to mountaineering or anything related to physical fitness for that matter. And consequently, I also grew up in an environment where I was not exposed to people who were into physical fitness, who were into health and those kind of things. So I was unhealthy. I was 110 kilos. I was obese and mountaineering was not in the wildest dreams that I had ever had in my life. So something completely by chance where my wife and I took a trip to the mountains. Mm-hmm. And I remember we ended up hiking on the last day of that trip to the top of Hattu Peak.
That was your first hike, right?
Maybe as a kid, I may have done a hike or two here in the local mountains near Mumbai as part of my school trips and stuff. But uh-huh. Like really, from what I remember, my first hike of life, probably this was the first hike of life.
Wow.
And yes, sure, the hike was great, beautiful. And I felt great. I felt some deep happiness when I was on the top standing there. It was quiet. It was me, my wife and one mountain dog that had come with us to the top. And for miles and miles, there was not a single human being. Everything was great. But I think what truly changed my life at that point was for me to experience something that I had never experienced in my life before is being able to exist in the microsecond of that moment. Mm-hmm. Sometimes in most of the times, actually, till that point in my life, maybe I thought, hey, I'm all the time planning for the future that I've never seen in some sense. Or I'm always looking at back at my mistakes in the past or what I've done in the past, trying to learn from them. But in this constant, mess of future and past and future and past, I was kind of forgetting that, well, I'm living in the present and it's very fast going out in front of me, becoming past, constantly. And I think in that moment when I was standing on the top there, I was able to experience myself in the present in that microsecond of a moment and a mind free of, kind of almost sitting back as a neutral observer in my own mind and looking at my mind and just enjoying that feeling.
Yeah.
And so for me, when I felt like that, I'm like, man, this is a game changer for me. Like, wouldn't it be so awesome if I can feel like this for the rest of my life? And a lot of people, you know, kind of always will talk about moderation. Like, hey, why not do things in moderation? I am someone who generally is either on the extreme side of things. Like, I will not do things in moderation when it comes to passion or when it comes to following my dreams. And then there'll be certain aspects in life where I'll just be on the extreme opposite, which is again apathy, which is also not great. So in some sense, you know, that's like a situation where I'm in. But I thought, man, I think I would be absolutely happy living like this for the rest of my life. And believe me, in the last 12 years, I have experienced this feeling repeatedly all the time.
Wow.
And I've never gotten bored of it.
Okay.
I have never found it to be very, very mundane or very, very routine, like how people would have always were telling me, if you do certain thing for X amount of time, you'll just get bored of it. I didn't get bored of it. I'm talking from my own personal experience. So to me, it was all about chasing that state of mind that I was able to achieve on top of the mountain. And it was never about mountaineering per se, not in the beginning, at least.
Right.
In the beginning, it was all about the state of the mind. And I thought, maybe I am creating this. I used to be a director of India operations of a software company, of a Los Angeles-based software company back then.
Uh-huh.
And I was creating the team and building out the entire operations here in India.
Okay.
And I thought, maybe when I go and do that work again, I am a passionate technologist. So I thought, maybe I'll get this feeling that I got on the top of this mountain. And unfortunately, I did not get that feeling when I was building out that company. And I thought, maybe, should I just go and try again climbing a mountain? Just, you know, like a couple of days of hiking, maybe in the Himalaya, and see what happens. So I went back and I felt like that again.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, man, this is amazing. And so for the next 1.5 years, I went back to the Himalaya over and over again.
Wow.
Until I finally ended up at Everest Base Camp.
Uh-huh.
And I still remember that evening when I was sitting in the dining tent. And one of my Sherpas was shouting my name. And in the mountains, it's almost always never good if someone's shouting your name. So I'm like, kya ho gaya? And I quickly ran out.
Mm-hmm.
And my Sherpa was, so look at Everest.
Mm-hmm.
And like I turned around and I saw Everest. Last rays of sunset were falling directly on Everest.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of mountains near Everest. Everest is a gigantic range. Of course, it's the tallest mountain in the world after all.
Yeah.
And all these mountains around Everest were the color of gray and blue. But Everest in the middle...
Mm-hmm.
was burning golden in color, as if someone had lit Everest on fire. And for me, when I saw Everest that way, I kind of, you know, just fell in love with Everest.
Wow. Huh.
And standing there, looking at Everest,
uh-huh.
it felt impossible.
Oh.
I was in no shape or I was in no mental mindset to get to the top of that mountain. And so it just felt, climbing Everest is same as taking a rocket and going to the moon. Both of them are not possible for me right now. But at least one of them, climbing to the top of Everest, is something that I could aspire and potentially go on a journey to get to the top.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I promised myself, I'm going to come back one day and get on the top of Everest.
Awesome.
And I think that has to be the pivotal moment of my life in some sense, because once I had that Everest in my life, once I had that overarching dream in my life, a lot of focus, a lot of dedication, a lot of passion, that relentless drive to go on a journey to get to the top. I think that only started with the fact that I had an Everest in my life. If you don't even have an Everest in your life, what are you going to chase? What are you going to pursue? There's nothing to pursue. There's no journey to go on. Yes, sure, everyone has, you know, a certain Everest in life. Hey, I need to pay my bills. Hey, I need to send my kids to the school. Hey, I need to do this. And hey, I need to do that. And all of those are great dreams. But I think something different from that, something that truly, when you wake up in the morning, gives you a sense of purpose.
Mm.
I truly enjoy this. I truly enjoy this from the bottom of my heart. And I'm not judging anyone who chooses to live a regular day-to-day life. It is their choice. But I truly believe from my experience, I can say that if you have this overarching Everest in your life, believe me, you will feel the same amount of passion and drive to probably go on the journey. So that's kind of, you know, a lot of background about how it all started, where it all started from, and like that pivotal moment that like, I literally took a U-turn in my life in some sense at that point.
Wow. So when this thought of climbing Everest came to your mind, So then after that, what all you did for your physical fitness?
Right. So I am going to share this quote from something that I've shared repeatedly. I have written about it on my blogs, on my posts, on my social media, is that I was talking to Tim, our expedition leader, mm-hmm. on that October of 2010 trip when I decided I'm going to climb Everest. And I asked him, Tim, I really aspire to climb Everest. One day I want to get on the top. And what do you think my focus should be? Can you share the secret behind climbing Everest? And his words were very simple, but something that I've guided my journey in the last 10 years and probably it will also guide the next entire life that I am going to live, is that Kuntal, to get to the top of the world, you need a top of the world mind and you need a top of the world body. I am going to talk very specifically in the context of Everest itself, but this is very applicable to any other journeys in your life. Especially in terms of Everest, I really thought that the foundation, like, you know, if you're creating a building or if you're creating a skyscraper, the very important thing is the foundation of it. And when you are going on a journey like Everest, you really want to have a very solid foundation. And in my mind, the solid foundation was going to be built on top of great physical fitness and immense amount of skill. So I had to build that level of physical fitness because I was starting from scratch. I was starting from zero. There was no background in terms of physical fitness. So I had to go on that journey to build physical fitness. And typically, my work week for me would look like 6 days of workouts and one day time off. 6 days of workouts was filled with a lot of working on building my cardiovascular endurance. And that was primarily driven by doing a lot of hikes, short-term hikes and really, really long-duration hikes, both targeting very, very different adaptations that would happen in my body, number one. Number two, strength training. This was very body weight oriented strength training so that there was enough muscular support from my body to kind of drive my cardio endurance goals, something like climbing Everest or climbing a mountain. I also included something called high intensity interval training. And this was done specifically with one goal, is to lower my resting heart rate to quite drastically to very lower resting heart rate. Like a typical average male in India would have a resting heart rate of about 72 or maybe 74 or 75.
Okay.
And my resting heart rate, as you know, for working out for about 2 years in the initial part of the Everest journey, was around 61 and 62. Pretty reasonable. But when you are climbing Everest, you need a much lower resting heart rate. In the next few years, I lowered my resting heart rate to almost about 44 beats per minute. So again, these were like the three big kind of pieces of my cardio endurance. And a lot of hiking also done in different conditions, like climbing in rock, climbing in snow, climbing in ice, climbing in dark, climbing without food, climbing without water. So a lot of simulation of potential conditions that would happen on the mountain, and combined with skill building. When you want to climb a mountain, you would want to get a base or get some skills in mountaineering, learn mountaineering, like how a doctor would, you know, go through their course, an engineer would go through their course, you know, for that matter, anyone who goes through formal education.
Correct.
I do realize the importance of formal education, and I did understand that I needed to have that skill to become a reliable and a safe mountaineer. Someone who can be a good teammate, someone who can also be a good leader, someone who can also be a safe mountaineer. And I also had to demonstrate to my family that, look, I am a safe mountaineer and that I'm a good mountaineer. That's that I'll make very, very good judgment calls and then I'll come back alive. So kind of I had to build this foundation of good physical fitness combined with a lot of skill, keep going through this journey and kind of always become like a better version of yourself. And I think that's the journey that I went on. And that's the journey that anyone who reaches out to me asking that, hey, Kuntal, I want to climb Everest. And I tell them that, look, there's no shortcut. So hard work, determination, consistency and discipline. You just have to kind of, you know, do the hard work, build this base. So that's kind of, you know, my take on the entire preparation bit around Everest itself.
Yeah, whatever you said, it applies for any person. They need to follow all these. Hard work, dedication, they should be a lot passionate, all that. So you are a vegan mountaineer who is the first to scale up the Everest. What actually gave you the thought like, I need to achieve this dream being a vegan? You climbed the Everest second time just for that.
Right.
So any reason behind that?
So A, I'm a vegan and I am a vegan for animals. It's just that I truly, from the bottom of my heart, believe that every animal is an individual, has emotions, feels pain, lives in a very kind of, you know, a family mindset. Because if you have ever seen an animal, it's not like that animal is alone, right? It also has a mother, it also has a father, it also has siblings, and they are always living in kind of, you know, family setting, just like how we do.
Right.
So in some sense, animals are just like us. Just because we think that we are smarter than them does not give us the right to abuse, slaughter, make them suffer, and all of those things. So I truly believe animals are here sharing the planet with us, not for us to use and abuse. So kind of, you know, stemming from that mindset, I went vegan because I also believe that what we control is what goes in our mouth and what goes on our body, what we eat and what we wear. Those two things are definitely 100% in our control, at least for most privileged people. Right. And we are sitting here and talking on a podcast. We're definitely privileged people in some sense. We don't have to worry about the next meal. We don't have to worry about a roof on our head and the meal on our table. We're definitely privileged people. So for us, we don't have to worry about these things. I'm not talking about Eskimos in northern Canada or, you know, some people who simply don't have access to money to buy, you know, certain type of clothing or certain type of food. Not talking about them. So in my mind, I had control over these two things. Mm-hmm. And I decided that it is the least I can do for the animals, for these amazing co-inhabitants of our planet. And that's why I went vegan. And which is why when I decided that I wanted to climb Everest, the idea was that I'm going to climb it as a vegan or not at all. And in the beginning, I didn't even think about it. I just thought I'm going to climb Everest as a vegan. I'm a vegan since 8 years. So there's nothing, you know, like I'm thinking something out of, you know, the box or something.
Right.
The issue was when I started talking to a lot of mountaineers and expedition leaders, that's where initial pushback started coming from, that you can't climb Everest as a vegan. You need meat, you need eggs, you need to drink milk, and you need to eat cheese, and you need to wear down, you need to wear leather, you need to wear wool. And I was like, this does not make any sense whatsoever to me. In my mind, when someone said you have to eat meat, I thought you have to eat protein. When someone said you have to eat cheese, I thought you have to eat fats. When someone says you have to drink milk, I thought they are saying eat calcium. And in my understanding and from my research of the nutrition world, there is enough nutrition in the sense of protein, calcium, vitamins, minerals, macronutrients, micronutrients, everything is in abundance available in the plant-based world. So why are these people kind of making it such that I cannot do it? And so in my mind, I thought, you know what, I'm going to try it. If it works, great. If it doesn't work, I'll find another dream and go and, you know, do that another dream. But in the journey, I quickly found out that vegan diet was the least of my problems. If in the last 12 years, I have to make a list of 101 problems that I faced on climbing Everest, vegan diet would not even be 102nd problem on that list. So veganism was not a hindrance. I didn't just survive on the mountain. I actually always thrived on the mountain on a very well-researched, well-planned and a well-balanced plant-based diet. That is completely no-brainer. Anyone listening in, if you are thinking, can I achieve the biggest dreams of my life on a vegetarian or a vegan diet? If I, a guy who used to be 110 kilos, unhealthy, obese software engineer, coming from a Gujarati background with zero predisposition or genetic gift of climbing mountains, if I can turn around my life on a vegan diet, build the top of the world body and mind, and go and climb Everest not just once or twice, I'm pretty sure each one of you can definitely achieve the biggest dreams of your life without having any animal to suffer or die. I'm very, very clear about that. It just needs commitment from your side, and it needs that research and some planning.
Right.
Why did I climb Everest the second time? Well, the first time when I reached the top of Everest, I was wearing a suit, a jacket, to be very clear, that is built to withstand temperatures of almost minus 50 degrees Celsius and really, really high winds. And this jacket, unfortunately, is made from something called down. And down is feathers of a slaughtered geese.
Okay.
Like, you know, when you hear feather jackets and you hear feather pillows and you hear feather blankets and feather quilts, where are those feathers coming from? Those feathers are not just coming from thin air. Those feathers are coming from a bird that has probably been slaughtered. Or worse is when they want to keep the bird alive and they will just pluck the birds when the bird is still alive.
Oh my goodness.
And they will cause tremendous amounts of pain to this bird. That bird will have bad infections. Most of them will just end up dying. Some of them will stay alive and will regrow feathers, and they'll be, you know, put through that process over and over again. So when I stood on top of Everest in 2016 for the first time, unfortunately, I was wearing a jacket which was made of dead bird feathers, to be very specific. The issue was that for 3-4 years before that, I had written to many of the gear manufacturers of the world asking them to create a synthetic alternative for me for this jacket, an animal-free alternative. Well, all of them said it is impossible. Some of them said it is financially not viable. Some of them just said, you are a single person on this planet asking for this jacket. Why would we make it for you? And at some point, I even thought I should make it on my own. And I even tried doing that. But I kind of failed at that. And finally, I gave up and I said, you know what? One time I'm going to buy this jacket.
Okay.
I'm going to climb to the top of Everest and show everyone that it can at least be done on a vegan diet to begin with. At least I can, you know, do this much. And I did that.
Right.
But then when I came back home, I think I was just struck by a lot of guilt. And I think that guilt did not leave me at all. It gave me a lot of sleepless nights. You know, in some sense, like Hindi mein wo bolte ke ek zameer khatak raha hai mera. And for me, I think it was my conscience was biting me a lot. And it got to a point where I had to do something about it. Like I started writing to a lot of companies again. I thought technology is kind of, you know, always improving, always progressing.
Absolutely.
15 years ago, no one would have thought that everyone would be, you know, doing podcasts and sitting on their mobiles all day long. And here we are in a completely futuristic generation now.
Yeah.
And so I thought maybe, you know, things are improving. So I started writing to all these companies again online. And then one of this company called Save the Duck, it's an Italian company. They reached out to me saying, you know what, Kuntal, we are really interested in your project. We really want to collaborate with you and build this synthetic alternative. And we want to see you on top of Everest.
Wow.
And we think that we have the technology that will put you on top of Everest. We are very confident about our technology.
Awesome.
I had never heard something like this from any company.
Okay.
I'm like, wow, this is amazing. So for about 8 months, we did research and development. We finally created the first synthetic suit of the world. I eventually went and I climbed a mountain called Lhotse. Look, the suit was never tested in minus 10 degrees. And suddenly I was going to test it on top of the world in minus 40, minus 50 degrees. So I had to do that testing on myself. And I had to do it on a slightly smaller mountain first, just so that I can kind of, you know, be a little pressure-free. When you're climbing mountain like Everest, there's a lot of pressure on you. So I wanted to climb a mountain which is slightly lower than Everest, but still almost as tall as Everest, so that I can get the right sense that this suit really works.
Okay.
And so I did it, climbed the mountain, was cozy and warm on the top. At 28,000 feet in minus 35 degrees Celsius, was completely fine.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that I was ready to climb Everest again now. And that's when I went in 2019 to climb Everest again, got to the top. And I think, truly speaking, in some sense, while 2016 climb of Everest for the first time will always remain close to my heart, what I felt when I got to the top of Everest the first time, I never felt like that ever again. So that will always stay special with me.
Uh-huh.
But also consider 2016 to be probably one of the biggest failures of my life in some sense, because I did not do it in the style I wanted to do it in. And so in some sense, in 2019, I truly completed the project of getting to the top of Everest in as good a style as I could practically pull it off.
Mm.
No one of us can be perfect. The idea is always progress over perfection. So I had made drastically good progress compared to last time. And I was personally happy with what I had done.
Right.
And that is what mattered to me. That, you know, like in my conscience, in my kind of, you know, that deep portion of the heart that I feel that, no, I have done the best I could. And that's what I felt when I reached the top of the mountain in 2019. So kind of that's where my project ended. And that's why I climbed the mountain the second time, to just climb it to show people that Everest can be climbed without eating animals.
Mm-hmm.
But also without wearing animals, very importantly.
Super. So many insights you have given us through this. Okay. You would have come across so many challenges when you went for the first time on the Everest. So how did you overcome those challenges, and how was the experience? Just share us that story.
Right. So look, Everest is climbed in stages. It's divided into three stages, stage one, stage two, and stage three. In stage one, you get to the base of the mountain. It's about 8 to 10 days worth of walking. Then in stage two, you let your bodies acclimatize to various altitudes on the mountain. And this stage takes a while because you have to do a lot of up, like climbing up and then coming down again. And then climbing up a little higher and then climbing back down again. And it's just a process that we have to do to let our bodies kind of acclimate in a very good fashion. But also you have to come down to the base camp so that you can recover and you can eat more. But this takes about 25 to 35 days anywhere, depending on the weather on the mountain. And then comes the last stage where you climb to the top of the mountain. Takes about 5 days to go up and about 3 days to come down. So about 8 days. It all depends again on weather windows. If the weather on Everest is terrible, like how it was this year, then this stage, you know, instead of 8 days, could even take 2 weeks or 3 weeks. So almost like 2 months you could be spending climbing this mountain. And lots of climbing challenges. Mm-hmm. But for me, I think much bigger challenge was at a very multi-year level. In the sense, I attempted climbing Everest in 2014. Okay. Unfortunately, 17 Sherpa guides died.
Oh my God.
And our expedition was cancelled. So we had to come back home.
Okay.
I said, okay, I'm going to try hard, you know, like training harder and go back the next year. And I did. I went back in 2015. And this time around, one of the largest earthquakes to hit Nepal happened. A 7.9 magnitude earthquake that ripped the base camp apart. And I miraculously escaped death. Like, I was literally standing in front of death. A big, massive avalanche. Like, entire sky from left of the sky to the right of the sky was filled almost like an ice. And a snow tsunami was in front of us. And to miraculously escape death then and survive, unfortunately, 21 people died at the base camp. More than 100 were injured in some seriously gruesome fashion. And then on top of that, 10,000 dead in Nepal, 5 lakh people homeless. It did not make sense to climb that mountain at all. It was no longer a mountain climbing tragedy. It was a tragedy across the entire country. And so kind of we canceled our expedition. We turned around and we went home.
Okay.
2 years back to back, our expedition was canceled. Climbing Everest once takes about 30 to 35 lakh rupees. My expedition was already canceled twice.
Okay.
Sure, you know, like sometimes you would look at money and you would think, okay, money is fine. At least you are alive. If nothing else, you are alive. As long as you are alive, you can always go back. You can always earn the money back. Like, you know, you kind of think in that way. But in some sense, when I came back the second time, I think there was a lot of people saying that maybe you don't have what it takes to climb this mountain. Or some of them saying, don't go back. You know, it's not for you. It's not our cup of tea. Or for that matter, my family didn't think that I didn't have it.
Mm.
They very well knew I had it because they had seen me train. But they were like, you know what, 40 people have died in the last 2 years. Why do you want to risk your life again to going back to climb Everest?
Mm.
And probably these are also the first time in my life that I had some self-doubts whether I will ever be able to make it to the top of Everest.
Right.
But one thing that has been very clear to me throughout this journey is that when you have a dream like Everest,
right,
there are going to be failures. There are going to be lots of challenges. There are going to be such adverse situations that are going to happen.
Mm.
And I think if you give up, I think it's your dream that's going to go. So I think your dream is your dream at the end of the day. And if you give up, it's your loss. No one else's loss. And I very well knew that. So I knew that I have to be razor focused now. I have all the momentum on my side. I have all the training of 5 years on my side. I have built this top of the world mind and body. Now is not the time to give up. I am going to try one more time in 2016. Go back and get to the top. And that's what I did. And I got to the top. And something that I tell a lot of people is that I think there have been a couple of instances where I have almost been ready to kind of throw in the towel and say I'm going home.
Mm.
But, and those situations only happened after I had put in all the effort I could. Believe me, anytime you are ready to give up, after putting in full-on effort, genuine, heartfelt, like, you know, pura apna sab kuch laga diya hai us cheez ke peeche. And if you're ready to give up, I would just say try a little harder.
Right.
Ek bar bas. Because I'm telling you, the summit is right around the corner. I have experienced this not once, not twice, but 3 or 4 times. So it is important to kind of, you know, have that at the back of your mind when you're going on this journey.
Yes.
That such a situation will come at some point. That I need to be mentally ready and I need to kind of overcome that hump. And so that is kind of, you know, one of my biggest takeaways from this entire journey. Is that don't give up. But at the same time, if you do give up after that, let's say you have tried, you have put in the 500%. And if you give up,
yeah,
it's not end of the world. But yeah, again, this is my personal individual journey. Everyone has to figure their own journeys out.
Correct. So after so many challenges, we achieved something, you know, very special, right? So how did you feel when you reached the top of Everest?
For me, those 20 minutes that I spent on the top in 2016, I think no word will ever do justice to what I felt. I think those were the most 20 magical minutes of my life.
Uh-huh.
And I think when you kind of reach the top of your Everest, I think at that point you will probably be able to identify how I felt.
Yeah.
But my Everest was climbing, you know, the literal Everest. Your Everest could be completely something different. Again, a story that I've shared multiple times, but a couple of feelings, couple of emotions. I very distinctly remember the moment I saw the top, I was like so relieved in some sense. I was like, man, this is so good. Thank you. I'm done. I have climbed Everest. I've finished this. And like, you know, I cannot move on in life. That was like the feeling that was like the very first feeling. But I think once that feeling went away, it was a feeling of intense emotion that I was overcome with. And I don't know, I think naturally I just started crying and just feeling super happy. And I remember like walking the next like 20 steps to the top and just crying and crying my heart out. Almost in some way, like 6 years of crazy level of discipline, dedication, consistency. Just one single thing in my life. That is Everest, Everest and Everest. I didn't have space for anything else in my life for those 6 years other than Everest. And finally, to kind of get on the top, I think it has to be probably the craziest feeling that one can like ever experience. And so it was amazing. Got to the top, had great view. I mean, right. Probably you are on top of the world. You are going to have a top of the world kind of a view. The next focus was just ensuring that staying mentally focused. Because when you get to the top, I think beyond that point, you have this sharp drop in adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel like really lack of kind of power, lack of effort, lack of everything. So I had to remind myself that stay focused, need to get back down in one piece because expedition is not yet over. In some sense, expedition is only starting. So that is kind of, you know, the mindset that I kind of very quickly switched to. I got to the top, enjoyed, had my fun, celebrated, and then kind of just switching to now the goal is getting to the base camp. And that's where I can truly go and celebrate and probably just getting back home and celebrating with my wife and with my mother and with my father and the family. So kind of just looking forward to that moment.
Wonderful. So how much do you think your life has transformed from what you have been doing before to now that you're doing something that you love doing and you had a dream and you've achieved that?
I think that Kuntal from 2009 that started the journey, if I met that Kuntal in a room, I probably would not even be friends with that Kuntal. I don't think that Kuntal and this Kuntal have anything in common other than probably being, you know, extreme people in some sense. But other than that, I don't think there were many common traits. That Kuntal did not enjoy fitness. That Kuntal did not enjoy healthy eating. That Kuntal did not have dreams. That Kuntal did not have passion. That Kuntal was too attached to materialistic things like clothes and real estate. And I'm not judging anyone, sorry. I'm not judging that Kuntal as well. But this Kuntal is not even 100% difference. It's like 1000% difference between that and this Kuntal. There's no common ground between those two people anymore. That's the level of transformation. I have gone through that. And
awesome.
And I think that level of transformation has only happened through probably the biggest teacher of my life, which is nature and the Himalaya. I think there is so much to learn from the nature if you are open-minded and if you are receptive to learning and, you know, looking at those experiences. And
correct.
And I think it's through those multiple experiences, going outside the comfort zone all the time. I think practically last 10 years, I have lived my life outside the comfort zone. I don't remember ever living in my comfort zone.
Okay.
To a point that living in the mountains is now my comfort zone. So probably now I need to get outside my comfort zone again so that I can, you know, transform again and become that Kuntal. And I'm pretty sure the next Kuntal, maybe 10 years later, will definitely be friends with this Kuntal. I'm very, very sure. This Kuntal enjoys healthy eating. This Kuntal enjoys fitness. This Kuntal enjoys, you know, mountains. I'm sure that Kuntal is not going to be drastically very different. Yes, that Kuntal will probably be much mentally stronger, physically stronger, and stronger in a lot more sense, different in a lot more sense. But I think there's going to be a lot of common ground between these two Kuntals. Unlike 2009 and 2021, where there's not much serious common ground there. So a lot of transformation. And I think at the end of the day, to me, at some point, Everest used to be my goal. And great, I achieved my goal.
Mm.
But after being constantly target and goal oriented and passion oriented, I also realized that there will be a certain point where you will run into a situation where you will not have a goal in life. Mm-hmm. And then you will struggle big time during those situations. And so I have completely changed my mindset. I no longer have these goals. Yes, these are nice milestones and targets that I have and that things that I want to do. But I think the bigger goal, or probably, you know, something where I've shifted my mindset quite a bit, is to constantly every single day show up to be the best version of myself. That is my end goal now. And climbing Everest or doing all these feats is just going to be the side effect of that goal. It's no longer the primary thing that I'm going to do. Right. So that's the kind of, you know, probably again, a takeaway that I can share with others, and maybe you guys can think of it in this way. I don't know. Even I'm finding out, right? I'm not like, I don't like think of myself as someone who knows all. Heck, I'm just even scratching the surface of what I know. So there's a long, long journey ahead, and we are all finding out as we go. But I think it's important to at least sit down and think about these things as you go on the journey, rather than just, hey, I'm just going to go through the motions.
Right.
Sure. Yet another, you know, chance wasted.
Yeah.
That's how I think.
Oh my God. You've shared so many insights, which are so deep. We need to not give up, go out of our comfort zone. You know, sometimes we tend to lose focus. We do not know the purpose in our lives. So we should constantly keep introspecting and you know, and be the best version of ourselves. That's super what you said. So we had a, you know, deep conversation. So let's go on a rapid fire round now. Okay.
Yes.
So I was like curious to know, which mountain are you going to climb next?
I am climbing a mountain within about 3 weeks' time.
Oh, okay.
It's a mountain called Kang Yatse 1. It's in Ladakh.
Okay.
And I am going to be the expedition leader of the team. We created the team some 6-7 months ago, and we have all been training together. So this is probably one of the first climbs that I'll be doing in almost more than a year and a half.
Awesome. So what is the craziest thing you've done so far in your life?
I don't know if Everest counts as crazy.
That's a biggest achievement.
I was just kidding. I do think in some sense Everest has to be the probably the craziest thing that I've done. I don't think I've done anything crazier than Everest. I think last 12 years entirely have been completely crazy. If I could meet that 2009 Kuntal somehow and tell them that, dude, you are going to climb Everest in like next 10 years, that guy would have just said, what kind of drugs are you smoking, man? Like, you know, give me some, you know, I would be happy, you know. Like, that's what that Kuntal would have told me. Like, seriously, it's, I had never imagined of going on this journey. And such a drastic U-turn in my life. So I think this entire 12 years has to be crazy in some sense.
Super. One thing you want to be remembered for in life?
I think I have thought about my legacy in some sense. Maybe I think I would like to be remembered as someone who made a positive, tangible impact in someone's life in their journey of their achieving their own personal Everest. I think that's what I would like to be remembered, and probably remembered as an ally for the animals, as someone who did what he could for the animals.
Awesome. Okay. You are an inspiration to us. Who's your inspiration?
A lot of people, but specifically there's a mountaineer called Ed Vistours. He's an American mountaineer. And he's one of the first, but I think the only American mountaineer to have climbed all the 14 tallest 8,000 meter mountains in the world without using oxygen.
Wow.
And he is one of my biggest role models, one of my biggest inspirations. He wrote a book called No Shortcuts to the Top. And that book has influenced my entire life of last 12 years. I have learned so much from that book, but just the mindset of no shortcuts to the top, and that I am able to apply that in every facet of my life.
That's amazing. Has there been any fear at all inside of you? Your biggest fear is what I would like to ask you.
I think initially it used to be a lot of fear of heights, because as a kid, I had a near-death experience falling off during a rock climbing. We were at a kid's camp and we were rock climbing and I fell down.
Oh my God.
Almost going to hit the ground head first, until like a Bollywood movie, miraculously one of the guys came and caught the rope and I was like, you know, saved and like that kind of stuff. But I think physically I did get hurt, but that physical wounds, you know, always heal easily. Your body's really great. But then there is also mental trauma that happens during such things. And kind of it's just difficult to get over the mental trauma in some ways. So to me, I think that's probably where the first seeds of fear of heights were kind of sown. And once I decided I'm going to climb Everest, it's like being able to overcome my fear or being able to manage my fears better. Mm-hmm. That definitely happened. There's always fear of death. So yeah, I mean, in some sense, some fears, but nothing, you know, that I can't manage.
Okay. Has there been any funniest moment in your life?
I think in the mountains, there's a whole lot of kind of, you know, funny moments happening. I think I remember one from 2019 where the entire team knew that, you know, I'm passionate about photography and that I'm passionate about night photography. And so on one of the days, I decided that I wanted to capture Everest with Milky Way in the entire scene. And I wanted to kind of have a very secluded area away from the lights and away from everything. So I decided that I was going to pitch a tent about 500 feet away from the base camp on a small hill. And that I was going to spend the night alone on that hill shooting pictures all night long. And I think behind my back, the Sherpas had procured some Yeti masks, like very, very realistic Yeti masks from somewhere. And they had all decided that 11, 12 of them were going to wear the Yeti masks. And at around 2, 3 o'clock in the night, they were all going to make the hike up. Mm-hmm. And that they were going to all come and scare me and everything. Somehow, I got wind of this whole thing. Okay. That something is being planned and everything. And like I tried staying awake all the time. Like I was like, man, when are these guys going to show up? When are these guys going to show up? Like, it's like, you know, impacting my mindset of, you know, even taking pictures. And but as the night passed by and I took pictures and I went to sleep and then I woke up at like 8 a.m, like freezing my ass. Like I was like super cold inside the tent. And then I went alone and realized that my Sherpa had dissuaded all the other Sherpas from going up and like, you know, doing any of this stuff. But such incidents of fun, all of this keeps happening on the mountains all the time, as much as possible, given that we are at 18,000-19,000 feet and whatever is possible. But yeah, it would have been funny if they would have showed up at 2 in the night, and that would have been like literally I was all the time looking for like a trail of headlamps and seeing if someone's coming, hearing out for the noises, and nothing was, luckily nothing happened, but it was a good funny moment.
Okay. What is a book that you would recommend people to read?
I think it has to be No Shortcuts to the Top. Definitely.
Okay. What is the biggest lesson you have learned in your life?
I think in terms of a life lesson, I would say trust the process. Do the hard work. Put in everything you have and have patience. The results will come.
Yeah. Super. Okay. What does money mean to you in your life?
Everyone has to pay their bills. Everyone has bills for that matter. And so I'm not going to be here saying, you know, money is not important at all. Money is important. Yes. If I'm able to take care of my responsibilities, if I'm able to pay bills, and if everything is kind of functioning well, then at that level, I'm also stress-free and I can pursue my passions, because you even require money to pursue your passions in first place. Absolutely. So in some sense, while I'm not going to, you know, kind of say that it's the most important thing in the world, but at the same time, I think people also, like when going on their Everest journeys, they also need to kind of plan their finances and plan their financial journey also in some sense. I have had my ups and downs and they continue happening. You know, everyone has. But I do think like that money is important. Again, it's not the do all end all. Mm-hmm. But in grand scheme of things, it's important and take care of it.
Yeah, very nicely said. So what's your favorite destination in the world?
It has to be Nepal, especially the Himalaya in Nepal. I would have said Indian Himalaya, but I do think it's Nepal Himalaya. Especially the Everest region will always kind of, you know, be an attraction for me. So if I have to take a vacation, definitely the Himalaya of Nepal.
Okay. If you were to time travel, what would you be doing?
If I could live the life all over again, I would really, really focus on my health, on my wellness, on being fit, just taking care of myself a lot better. Something that I did not in a lot of those formative years. Mm. And that's what I would kind of, you know, do differently, as simple as that.
Okay. So we have one more question to go. Before that, what is your advice to the people who want to follow their passion and take that up as their career?
I would be the wrong guy to advise, because I haven't taken my passion as a career. So I have kept my passion and my career separate, because somehow I haven't been able to monetize my passion if that's the right word. And I never tried monetizing my passion in some sense, to be very frank. But I think to anyone who wants to kind of, you know, convert their passion or, you know, find a good balance between your passion and your career or make your passion your career, I am pretty sure if you are showing up, putting in that 100% effort and doing some good things, people will want to associate with you and people will be more than happy to pay you. If you're adding value to their life or to their journeys, I cannot see why they would not be willing to pay you, and that you should be able to make a career out of it. And that don't have any, like, I never, like, you know, think that, hey, I want to become like this rich guy and, you know, just have all this, you know, crazy money. I'm satisfied with the money I have and, you know, the experiences I have. Like, I'm not saying don't be ambitious. Be ambitious. Have a lot of aspiration. But, like, also, if you don't make a lot of money, it's okay. Lead a very simple life so that you don't really have to crazily keep earning money to support a life that is completely unsustainable. Is what I would also say for people who want to, you know, like, make their passion their career as well.
Okay, wonderful. So the last question of this round, if you were given the power to change the world in a day, what is the one thing you will be doing?
I think probably I would just convert the entire world to go vegan and just save every animal.
Awesome.
Maybe just, you know, instead of converting them to vegan, just give them extra knowledge around oppression, around social justice. So that it's not just the vegan cause that they get aware about, but they get aware about all other oppressive, things that are happening in the world, may it be sexism, may it be racism, may it be casteism, may it be patriarchy, may it be LGBTQ phobia that happens, or just maybe all these oppressive practices that are there across the world. If I had the power, I would want them to become aware of that, and that I would fill them with tons and tons of empathy. So that they actually empathize rather than sympathize with those causes. Because I think truly empathy can drive really positive action. So that's what I would do. But I would want people to, like, you know, if they converted to vegan overnight and we can, like, just save so many animals. It's not as simple as that. But that would be, like, you know, something that I would have done as well.
Awesome. We have done with the rapid fire round. It was an awesome conversation with you. You have shared a lot of insights. Thank you so much again, Kuntal, for coming to my podcast. All the best for your future endeavors.
Thank you.
So thank you so much, guys, for your time and listening to this episode. I'm sure it would have added a lot of value to your life and given you clarity of how to live your passion with a purpose. So if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please do subscribe to my podcast and share it with your family, friends, and colleagues. And please don't forget to share your comments on what you think about this episode on Apple Podcasts. You can connect to me on Instagram at Power of Passion, and I will catch you next week on another inspiring episode of Power of Passion. Until then, stay safe, and most importantly, do what you love. Thank you.